Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. Today I'll be talking with conductor Lawrence Rennes and bass baritone Christian Van Horn from the San Francisco opera production of Benjamin Britten's provocative and challenging opera, Billy Budd. You'll also hear about additional San Francisco opera and San Francisco symphony events on this very busy opening week for both institutions. We'll have a live in-studio performance by members of the Zephyrus Woodwinds. A woodwind quintet will be having a concert this Sunday evening here in San Francisco. We'll hear about the venue and concert series they're playing on from the producer of the series at Swedenborgian Church here in San Francisco, Andrew Dodd, also in studio. Plus a conversation with Bay Area composer, pianist Gregory Tabaloff. Stay with us. That's music by my first guest, Gregory Tabaloff, performing as well from the second movement of his Piano Concerto No. 1, The Mystic. It's being performed at the Herbst Theater on September 8th. Gregory has been hailed by the New York Times for his irrepressible energy, poetry, and genuine introspection, and has performed around the world. He won his first piano competition at the age of 15 and has made numerous appearances as soloist and as guest artists with several full orchestras, including the Oakland Symphony, led by George Cleave, the Diablo Symphony, the California Symphony, among others. Philanthropically minded, back in 1996, he did a pretty amazing feat by playing three piano concertos in one night at a fundraising gala for the Make-A-Wish Foundation held at Wente Winery. He also made a solo fundraising bike-a-thon from California to Oklahoma City, capping the journey with a solo concert in the city to raise funds for children affected by the Oklahoma bombing. Gregory, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you very much, David.
Well, tell us about your piano concerto. That is a lot of things going on in just that small excerpt we heard from the second movement.
Well, I'm so excited to present my major work, the Mystic Piano Concerto, in the city that is so significant to my abilities as a composer. San Francisco has always been near and dear to my heart ever since I studied at the San Francisco Conservatory in the Sunset District.
Sure.
And now, of course, it's a little closer.
Right. Downtown. And I understand you studied composition as well with John Adams and Eleanor Armour.
Correct. Eleanor Armour and John Adams were two of my most important mentors in composition.
So the Mystic takes its name from, in part, a work of art by your wife.
Yes, I love to study literature, and I draw musical inspiration from literature, and I was reading a book called Leaves of Grass by the great American poet Walt Whitman. And in this giant collection was a poem that really struck me called The Mystic Trumpeter. The Mystic Trumpeter really has all the elements for a great narrative of musical composition, including love, pageantry, struggle, joy, and of course, a mystic trumpet. But also, I was very inspired by my wife's painting, The Mystic, which will be on display at the Herbst Theater at this wonderful concert. And her painting is entitled The Mystic.
We heard a little bit of that third movement. Let's back up to the second movement. Tell us a little bit about the influences that went into the second movement.
Right. Well, in the middle, all the earth to lovers is love. And I felt this was the time to release some of the great tension of the first movement, which is very heavy. And then a very light, beautiful love theme permeates throughout the second movement, which is echoed in the first violinist's solo after the piano opens with that theme. So it's about a minute and a half in to the piece, and the orchestra has a really long chorale section, mostly played in the strings, but the trumpet always comes through and is heard in each of the three movements.
Well, let's hear a little bit of the second movement now from Gregory Tabalov's Piano Concerto No. 1, The Mystic. Beautiful second movement of Gregory Tabalov's Piano Concerto No. 1, The Mystic. Gregory, tell me a little bit about the poetic inspiration for that movement.
Right. From The Mystic Trumpeter, Whitman's sentiments are followed. Love, that is the pulse of all, the sustenance and the pang, the glow, the blush, the beating hearts of lovers.
Lovely, lovely. And this performance of the Piano Concerto No. 1, The Mystic, will be this coming Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Herbst Theater here in San Francisco.
Yes.
Under the direction of your collaborator in crime, so to speak, David Ramadanov, who I'll be talking with later this season on Open Air. Also on the program, the Overture to the Magic Flute and the Third Piano Concerto of Beethoven.
Correct, yes.
So David was involved with an earlier production of the concerto, so he's been a collaborator for you for a while on this.
Yes, and he's been very inspirational. You know, I studied with him at Dominican College many years ago, and he was the music director and conductor there, and I play two other instruments, too, not very well, not like the piano, but I learned in my childhood to learn to play the clarinet and the viola. So I was an adequate violist, that's about all I can say, but I performed underneath him, and he was always a towering figure to me. So there was a little bit of intimidation when I got reconnected with him decades later and asked him, would he be my maestro to perform?
And he actually was the conductor for this recording we're hearing as well.
That is correct, right?
Nice.
So we're doing it now twice. We did it 2 years ago, 2017, at the Lesher Center for the Arts in Walnut Creek.
Mm-hmm. And he's put together a stellar group of Bay Area musicians for the Tabaloff Philharmonic. It's nice to have a Philharmonic named after you as well.
Right. I didn't know what to do about that, but I thought since I was worried about copyright laws, if I called it my own name, I wouldn't have to worry about it being borrowed.
What other sorts of composing do you do?
Well, I've written a lot of smaller piano pieces. I've written a piano trio, a string quartet, but now I'm working on probably the largest project of my life. I'm working on an opera, which follows the life of Dante and Beatrice from the great book of poems called La Vita Nuova, or The New Life. It chronicles Dante's love of Beatrice since he was 9 years old until her untimely death at the age of 25. And he kept writing poetry, so the book lives on beyond her life. It's perfect inspiration for writing a great storyline to an opera.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And putting together this program, which I mentioned also includes Mozart's Magic Flute and the Piano Concerto No. 3 of Beethoven, a nice choice on that front.
Thank you. Yeah. They tie in because of the word mysticism. And as you know, the Magic Flute has all that mystical quality when the Magic Flute saves the day and rescues Tamino.
Lovely. Nice tying things in there. The concert is at the Herbst Theater this Sunday at 3 p.m. The Herbst, of course, is at 401 Van Ness Avenue. Gregory Tabaloff and the Tabaloff Philharmonic under the direction of David Ramadanov, and some stellar musicians in that group, including several friends, I hope, to catch that concert. We're going to go out with a little bit of from the first movement. Why don't you set up what we're going to be hearing from that?
Okay, this is the first entry of the Mystic Trumpeter. And so the Mystic Trumpeter will appear in the middle of my big piano cadenza. It's to draw together all of the elements of the first movement.
Here we go. This is part of the first movement of the first piano concerto of Gregory Tabaloff. He's performing as well when this recording by David Ramadanov and the Tabaloff Philharmonic. Thanks for coming in, David.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That excerpt from Gregory Tabalov's first piano concerto, we did hear the Mystic Trumpeter sounding. The three-movement piano concerto number one, the Mystic, will be performed this coming Sunday at 3 p.m. under the direction of David Ramadanov and the Tabalov Philharmonic. Also on that program, music of Mozart and Beethoven. Learn more at gregorytabaloff.com. That's TABOLOFF.com or at cityboxoffice.com. Those links will be at our website, klw.org. Look for Open Air there. Still to come, I'll be having a conversation with conductor Lawrence Rennes and singer Christian Van Horn about the production of Billy Budd at the San Francisco Opera. You'll learn more about the opera's happenings and this week's grand opening festivities of the San Francisco Symphony as well, so stay with us. And it's always nice to have some live music as part of Open Air, so let's hear some. From Boismortier's Sonata in G Minor for Transverse Flute with Bass, the Allemande and Courante, performed by two of the five members of the Zephyrus Woodwinds, bassoonist Tom Hill and flutist Diana Gomez. Tom performs on modern and historic bassoons and studied modern bassoon with Aaron Irvine and Baroque Bassoon with Kate Van Orden. He's performed with American Bach Soloists, California Bach Society, the Jubilate Orchestra, as well as the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony, with which he was featured as soloist on a couple of occasions. In addition, Tom is a gifted sculptor and showing in galleries in the United States and abroad. I'm happy to call him a good friend as well. Tom, say hello.
Hello.
He's joined on flute by Diana Gomez, who recently retired from a 30-year career directing bands, orchestras, and jazz bands in the San Francisco Unified School District. Diana has played with a number of local groups, including the San Francisco Wind Ensemble, the Golden Gate Symphony Orchestra, the San Francisco Civic Symphony, as well as the Oakland Municipal Band, with which I played with her recently at Lake Merritt, and which actually led to the circumstances of today's appearance. Welcome to you, Diana.
Mm-hmm. Nice to be here, David.
Happy to have you. And here to talk about the series at the Swedenborgian Church is the producer of the series, Andrew Dodd. He's started the Second Sunday's concert series there in 2016. He's a fifth-generation San Franciscan and of the Bay Area, and with a 30-year career in advertising, design, production, and creative direction. A very nice welcome to you.
Great. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Andrew, so first tell us about the venue. I have not yet ventured to the Swedenborgian Church on Lyon Street.
Well, you're not alone. There are people who live in the neighborhood and haven't ever seen it, didn't even know it existed, because it is kind of elevated off the street, being on a slope, and it's a garden church. It has a garden, and it's amazing that for its being a national historic monument, it isn't better known. People have lived in San Francisco for decades and never even heard of it or not known it's there. And yet, it's a National Historic Landmark. It's the highest designation the Interior Department can bestow upon a place.
Fantastic. And it must have a good acoustic for music, then.
It has a very nice, warm acoustic for music. It's a small church. It only seats about 100 people. So it's great for intimate ensembles like Zephyrus Woodwinds. Mm-hmm. We've had amazing performers for the last 4 years performing there who've all enjoyed performing there.
Mm-hmm. And how you have such a wealth of talent to draw on in the Bay Area for this concert series.
Exactly.
Must be a wealth of choices to get.
I feel incredibly blessed. And the joy for me is to be able to discover ensembles that I didn't know existed and to reinvigorate my own interest in music by being able to present these fine musicians and their ensembles and really give people a chance to hear them up close in person and in such a beautiful setting, a candlelit sanctuary. It doesn't even look like a church. It looks like a Swiss chalet or something. The roof is held up by madrone trees. And it has California landscape paintings on the wall instead of pictures of saints and so on. Mm. So it doesn't feel as much like a church as a meeting house, but it's a great place to hear music, and especially fabulous winds, strings, everything that come. And we've had jazz, we've had Indian fusion music, we've had lots of wonderful classical ensembles, and they all sound great, and people love to hear music there.
Mm-hmm. You're calling this season your benefit season, with the profits from the entire season going to three local nonprofits. Tell us about how you chose those.
So I was looking for a way to give back to the community with this series, to really give people a reason for going and for giving back on their own. And so I looked for what people would like to contribute to that are meaningful organizations in our community, and help real communities that really could use the support. So I found one that is involved with animals and disabled people, one that revives natural habitats in San Francisco, and one that promotes music with the youth. So Canine Companions for Independence empowers people with disabilities by providing highly trained assistance dogs and ongoing supports. And I'm sure you've seen those in use, and they're a great organization to provide that. And then Nature in the City actually goes out and engages residents in the neighborhoods to help restore wildlife habitats in the neighborhoods in San Francisco. So they're involved in their own neighborhoods. And then the Young Women's Coral Projects of San Francisco, which trains young girls in choral music education and performance, and in so doing really enhances and changes their lives. So all three organizations really do remarkable things for a variety of parts of a community, and I'm really glad to be able to support them with all of our proceeds.
That's fantastic. It's very noble of you as well. I encourage folks to learn more about the entire series at the church by going to swedenborgian.org. That's Sweden like the country, B-O-S-F, swedenborgian.org.
Yeah.
Sweden like the country, B-O-R-G-I-A-N.org. We'll add that link to our website as well at Open Air. The Zephyrus Winds will present diverse voices, rarely heard gems, works from diverse composers past and present, for a delightful musical adventure this coming Sunday at 7 p.m. At the Swedenborgian Church on Lyon Street near Washington Street. We're going to hear more music, though, next from two of the members of the Zephyrus Winds, Diana Gomez and Tom Hill, and then we'll learn more about the program that they're offering at the church this coming Sunday. Here's more of the Boismortier Sonata. Two-fifths of the Zephyrus Woodwind Quintet, flutist Diana Gomez and bassoonist Tom Hill. The full quintet also includes oboist Kathleen Connor, Susan Vollmer on French horn, and Karen Wells on clarinet. They're performing this coming Sunday at the Swedenborgian Church here on Lyon Street in San Francisco. And now to share with a little bit about what the full quintet will be doing is flutist Diana Gomez. Hi, Diana.
Hi, David. So our quintet is actually looking more at the whole expanse of music literature written for woodwind quintet. So, I mean, this is early, late Baroque that Tom and I just played. We have one piece that's late Baroque in our concert coming up by Svelink, and it's a much more choral, harmonious, a chance to hear the five instruments, flute, oboe, clarinet, French horn, and bassoon. Some of the other pieces are much more modern, avant-garde. We're going to be opening with a piece by Gregory Ligeti, who's a Hungarian composer, just recently passed away. And it's made up of just the construct of the piece is one movement is only four notes. So how can you make a movement of five instrumentalists using only four notes? And he does. It's very exciting. And then the next movement uses all of seven notes. And then the third movement that we're going to play, I think, is only five notes. So it's a completely different construct than the kind of thing that you just heard. We're going to move from the Svelink, which I talked about earlier, into a piece by Darius Mio, who was a composer that spent his career in two countries, Paris, France, and the Oakland Hills at Mills College. And the piece that we're going to play is called La Cheminée de Roy René. He wrote this for a movie in 1939, and he was taking stylistic ideas from Renaissance music, and I hear it mostly in the ornaments and in the rhythms and in the names of the movements, more so than you hear it in the actual harmonies, because it's very modern harmonies.
Yeah, I know that work well. As a fellow flutist, that's one of my favorite quintets. I'm glad
it's a lot of fun to play, isn't it?
Yeah.
Again, a lot of low register, which I was demonstrating here. Then we're moving into an American composer, William Grant Still, African-American composer, had a very successful career composing and conducting, did a lot of works for woodwinds. And the piece that we're doing is the middle movement of a piece that he wrote. I think he originally wrote it for piano. And this is the middle movement of three renditions of the afterlife or of death. And this is Summerland. This is the happy one. So, you know, the peace and tranquility of heaven.
Nice.
Which is depicted as Summerland. And it's got some bluesy elements to it. It's a very lovely piece. Mm-hmm. We're moving from there to another American composer, Gwyneth Walker. And she is taking... We're taking one movement out of her Braintree Quintet. Do you know this quintet,
David? I don't, no.
It's really fun. You should check it out. A Methodist meeting house and five hymns from that Methodist tradition. We're going to be doing Abide With Me. And this is where it starts out, just beautiful. We're going to play the hymn in its four-part harmony. Then the oboe takes the voice, and then the clarinet interrupts it, and the bassoon interrupts from there. The flute comes in trying to be that element of danger and unhappiness in life, and then the French horn sings the hymn. While we try our hardest to make it dangerous and difficult,
okay.
But the French horn abides with the hymn. Then it moves in. Gwyneth Walker moves out of that sort of aleatoric idea into different renditions of the hymn, some fast, some more, what would the word be? Lyrical or thoughtful or, yeah.
Right.
So it's a lot of fun. And we're ending the first half with that, Abide With Me. I think it fits into the Swedenborgian setting very well.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Nice. We are going to go out. I was very pleased that you guys agreed to perform live as two-fifths of the quintet. Mm-hmm. But we're going to go out with some of your recorded music of the Zephyrs. Tell us what we're going to hear.
This is Vals Venezolano by Paquito de Rivera. So it's just a look at the Southern Hemisphere. A lot of fun.
Nice. Diana Gomez, thanks for coming in. Tom as well. And Andrew, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
music of Paquito de Rivera, performed by the Zephyrus Woodwinds. That was oboist Kathleen Connor, Susan Vollmer, French horn, as well as Diana Gomez on flute, Tom Hill on bassoon, and Karen Wells, clarinetist. Look for Zephyrus Woodwinds on Facebook or go to sfswedenborgian.org to learn more about their concert this coming Sunday at the Swedenborgian Church. There'll be a reception with wine and food that'll feature representatives from the organizations that will benefit the wonderful work they do for the community, and all the concertgoers are invited to that as well. Again, the Zephyrus Woodwinds this coming Sunday afternoon. Evening. Swedenborgian.org for more information. Well, the composer Benjamin Britten wrote Billy Budd to a libretto by the English novelist E.M. Forster and Eric Crozier based on the short novel Billy Budd by Herman Melville. It was originally in four acts and first performed by the Royal Opera House in London in 1951, later revised as a two-act opera with a prologue and epilogue, the version that will be presented here at the San Francisco Opera for six performances beginning this Saturday. For those not familiar, the prologue and epilogue are sung by the captain of the HMS Indomitable. In the prologue, Captain Edward Fairfax Vere, an old man now, reflects on his life and time in the Navy. He reflects on the conflict between good and evil and is tormented by the guilt over the case of Billy Budd on board his ship some years earlier. The year then becomes 1797, at sea during the French Revolutionary Wars. Billy Budd, a young, handsome innocent with a stutter, is pressed into service on the warship and harassed by members of the crew in spite of his enthusiasm for being on board. His stammer leads out to his lashing out at an officer, unfortunately killing him and dooming the young sailor. The articles of war are read and show that Billy must be hanged. Just before his execution, he praises the captain with his final words, singing, "Starry Vere, God bless you." In the epilogue, Vere, once again as an old man, remembers Billy's burial at sea, reflecting that the man he failed to save has instead blessed and saved him. In this production, Billy Budd is played by John Chest, Captain Vere by William Burton, and the all-male cast also includes Hadley Adams and Philip Skinner. John Claggart, the doomed master-at-arms, is played by Christian Van Horn, and the production is conducted by Lawrence Rennes. I caught up with the latter two earlier this week at the Opera House. Here's that conversation. Van Horn, Maestro Lawrence Rennes, welcome to Open Air.
Great to be with you.
Thanks for having us.
Maestro, you had your San Francisco Opera debut back in June of 2012 with John Adams' Nixon in China. Ironically, the first time that opera was staged in the hometown opera house of composer John Adams, and he's a composer you've really been championing on the concert hall all over the world.
Yes. I'm not sure if I would call it championing. I mean, he's so incredibly famous that he doesn't need so much championing, I think. I started out my conducting career, I extended my studies after I graduated when I became the assistant to Edo de Waard in the Netherlands, where I'm from. Maestro de Waard was with the San Francisco Symphony, and I think it was he who commissioned the first large works from Mr. Adams. And so as they were friends, I got to meet John Adams quite early on, and so it was very natural for me to perform his music also because I absolutely loved it and still love to.
Mm-hmm. And congratulations on your 2008 award of being part of 10 Best Classical Recordings of the Year in 2008 by The New Yorker for Dr. Atomic.
Right. Oh, yeah, that was... Yeah, I think that there was a DVD made when I did the European premiere of Dr. Atomic after it world premiered here in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Well, I saw an interview of you on YouTube for the Malta Philharmonic in which you recounted an early important conversation with a conductor as a 14-year-old when you went to a concert. Maybe you could relate that for our radio audience.
So I'm half Dutch, half Maltese. I would always spend my my summer holidays in as a child in Malta, and as I was a violinist as well at that time, I would practice my violin. And so this one summer day was very hot, and I was practicing, and somebody knocked on the door, and I thought, well, maybe somebody was getting annoyed with all the practicing, and so I opened the door, and there's this older gentleman who introduces himself as Maestro Josef Samut, who was a Maltese conductor. And he said he heard me practice, and he said, you know, we're doing Tosca at the opera house in Malta and in Valletta, and he said we could use a violinist like you in the first violins, and would you come and play? And I thought it was very exciting, and so I said yes, and that was the first my first contact with opera, actually. Yeah.
So that Puccini stays with you, doesn't it?
Oh, it does, and opera stays with you, and that was an incredible experience for me.
Mm-hmm. So, in addition to the diving into the libretto of the opera, and of course the music, did you revisit the novella of Herman Melville?
Absolutely, yeah. I read as much as I can about the opera, about the whole the process of composing, and of course where it comes from literary, and. And the Melville, it's such a fantastic novel. So I would encourage everyone to read it.
And opera is becoming more and more prevalent on your resume. Is opera something you've always wanted to come to? Was it that early charge of Puccini that's now making you more delving into the operatic world?
Well, I don't know. About a year and a half ago, I finished a 7-year stint as music director of the Royal Swedish Opera, and before that, I was Generalmusikdirektor of the opera in Bremen in Germany for 5 years or something. So, I think I've been pretty busy with opera already for quite some time.
Well, are you looking forward to debuting another opera or in the contemporary front, or what's on your calendar that you're looking forward to?
I look forward to everything that I'm doing. It's also because, having done so much now, I'm this very fortunate position that I can, I can say no to things that I'm not really interested in doing, and yes to the things that I'm very interested in doing, and that's the best motivation, basically. And so I could not be more happy with all the things that I'm doing. And I love a very varied diet. So going from early music to new music to the great classics to from opera to symphony and small groups, large orchestras. It's a great life. I'm very fortunate.
I should really strike that off of my list of questions to ask people, because it's like asking for their favorite child, or the dangerous question of asking an actor what's next when the actor may not have anything on his plate. So I'm glad to see you're very busy and happy with what you're doing here, and welcome back to the Hall of San Francisco Opera. Christian Van Horn, congratulations on the 2018 Richard Tucker Award, only the third bass baritone to do so in the 40-year history of the award. Other than a nice check and a nice addendum to the resume, what does that really entail?
Something Lawrence just actually said, it's given me the opportunity to do the things I really want to do and say no to some things that I don't necessarily want to do. It's an incredible list of singers to be included on, and so to that end, it was very humbling. Other than that, it's just a humongous joy to have even been thought of. And
is that by nomination, or is that something?
From what I've understood, it's not necessarily something that's well known, but I think people submit names, and then there's a panel that probably vote from there. I feel like the stars need to align for that process to work out, and I felt pretty lucky that year.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Congratulations
again.
And no stranger to this opera company, debuting here in 2010 with several subsequent featured roles. We last saw and heard you in this house as Zoroastro in the contemporary setting by Harry Fair of Handel's Orlando. Beautiful performance, by the way.
Thank you.
What was your take on that interpretation?
It worked. We challenge directors. If they want to take something out of time period or out of context, it has to make sense. And if you can answer every question, then we'll accept that, we're going to do this different idea. And so Harry was prepared, And he was well prepared historically. He put it right at the brink of World War II. And we, you know, there was no stone unturned when it came to processing this text to fit this time period. And I was ready for a fight. And he was well prepared. He did very well.
And you're coming back this way for Verdi's Hernani in June. Perhaps we can see you again then. Several performances ahead at the Met, including the New Year's Eve gala and a title role debut as Mephistopheles. That has to be a house that you'll always remember your first time. Could you tell us about that?
My first time. I sang Pistola in Falstaff, and was James Levine, and it was Ambrosio Maestri, and Stephanie Blythe, and was this incredible cast. Wow. And I was probably terrified, and it went fine. You know, we don't do anything without a lot of practice, and so very rarely are we put in a situation to not succeed.
Yeah.
And so it went very well, and it went just as fast as it came. And you know, I guess that's been 7 or 8 years now.
Mm-hmm. And you're a Long Island boy, raised on Long Island. So was that your home opera house? Did you ever dream of performing at the Met, or did opera come later to you in life?
It was much later. Yeah, it was not until I got to college. And I had sung some Broadway shows in school, you know, in high school. And I got to college, and I thought, I really want to stay in the show, you know. Like in the high school, the Broadway show was 60 girls and 4 guys. And so these numbers were so good that I just wanted to keep that going. Which is the truth. And then I met a teacher who was well-respected, had worked a long time in the business. And I asked him if he thought I could do this for a living. And he says I think it'll take a lot of money in about 10 years. And he was right. And so I just trusted that he knew what he was doing, and we went along. It's the only teacher I've ever had.
Wow, fantastic. And now you're in an all-male production of Billy Budd.
That's right.
You made it.
Does Britain have the distinction of having the only work that is created for an all men, other than choruses and such?
I think so, yeah.
Boris Godunov? I have to think.
Is there a Mrs. Godunov?
No, but there is. There's
yeah.
What's her name?
Yeah. But predominantly.
Yeah. War and Peace also.
Right.
But I think this is the only one. Mm-hmm.
Christian, you're playing the role of John Claggart. Tell us about your character, the master at arms to Captain Veer aboard the HMS Indomitable.
I think we have good on the stage, and the good is Billy Budd, and he represents everything that's wholesome and great and positive, and he's godlike in a lot of ways. And if you have God, you have to have the devil. They can't exist without each other. And so I approach Claggart that way. He is the antithesis.
Playing Mephistopheles later, anyway.
Well, Mephisto's having a good time. I don't think John Claggart's enjoying this. I think he enjoys winning, but I don't think he's enjoying his life. I think Mephisto enjoys every second of his day. And Claggart is tortured. He's tortured from the first page to the last page, and there's a million layers there. I found it really satisfying to try and keep adding another layer to the texture, which we've done, I think, a few times now.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can give a little bit away of the plot. What happens is Billy Budd accidentally kills Claggart in the second act, is it?
Yeah.
And because of the rule of the law, the rule of the sea, and the time frame that this is set in, you know, the French Revolution just happened, Billy Budd has got to be put to death.
You know, in this production, we really got into the bones of what were the rules on these ships. You know, how scared were you for your life? What was expected of you? What could happen to you? And so just because he didn't intend to kill me, I mean, if you strike a superior in the rules of war at this time, you would be executed. Not just kill him. And so striking a superior was enough to be put to death. So Billy really, you know, he bought it when he killed me.
Different approach to learning a role such as the Briton as opposed to other contemporary composers or the classic repertoire, so to speak?
I've certainly learned my fair share of contemporary opera, and so I know what it takes to get these sometimes odd harmonies or odd rhythms into your body, and it just takes double the normal time. You know, if you listen to a Verdi aria, you can sing it pretty much the next day without having to look at it. You know, I don't want to say obvious, but it can be very clear what needs to happen. And so in the Briton, so often your instinct is not good. You have to go into your Britain instinct.
Yes.
And so repetition, for me anyway, was paramount.
Mm. Well, the late New Yorker critic Andrew Porter called Billy Budd musically the richest and most arresting of Benjamin Britten's 15 operas. Would you gentlemen agree with that? Or
of the five that I've done, by far, I would put this and Gloriana up on the same pedestal as far as the richness. The chorus music in Billy Budd alone is worth the price of the ticket. And it's a fantastic show. I'm a full believer in Britten and Billy Budd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I've been such a great fan and admirer of Benjamin Britten for a long time. So to single out one piece is difficult. But if I would have to, then probably Billy Budd is the best. But also some of his later work, a really obscure piece like Owen Wingrave, an opera he wrote for television. I mean, if you look at the orchestration of that, that is also magnificent, but in a very different way. He developed all these other ideas but it's definitely a language that, you know, if you study an opera as a singer or as a conductor, you know, a Britten opera, you really have to understand the musical language. But once you do, it is so incredibly rich, and it's nothing less. It's no less than Verdi or Mozart or any of the other great opera composers.
Britten, for me, like, gets into your bones.
Absolutely.
And then it becomes your favorite thing. For me, I in the middle of it, I go, oh, God, I love this. Every time we do it, I love it. I'm never tired of it. And then it stays with you for years, 10 years, 15 years. You still, this music stays with you.
Yeah. And also it has this, I mean, Britten was such a talent on so many levels. And if you look at the architecture of something like Billy Budd, it is so incredibly well done. And I know that the audience, I mean, these are things that we need to understand because we need to perform it. But for an audience sits there, they will realize the greatness of the music, you know, and not necessarily by understanding every detail of it, but it's a little bit like you go to a great restaurant, you have great food, and you know, you might not understand how it was made, but you know it was great. And it's really the same, I think it's the same with this opera. Is, you know, people will come and people will be blown away
right away.
Christian, you were mentioning how much you're enjoying this production. It's not always that you go into an opera production enjoying it from start to finish.
Or even knowing what it is. You know, there's plenty of times where we don't, you know, I don't get production approval. You know, I'll find out who the director is. If the production exists, I can go and look at it before I make a decision. But I knew this production very well. This is Glyndebourne 2012 or 13.
Something like that, yeah.
I was supposed to do it one time in one of the reprisals, I think.
At BAM?
No, I had a contract for Glyndebourne.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then my son was being born, and so I had to cancel that. But
right.
So I knew the production, and I love it. I think it's the ship is incredible. You feel like you're on this boat. I think the audience is going to be on the boat with us.
Yes.
And we had it from day one. We were on the deck, you know, the first week we were here, which is unheard of. You know, to try and get yourself on a set is very difficult.
Yeah,
the
I think
full set, but it's clearly a character in the show. We had to have it there.
Absolutely, and it's one of the many signs for me why San Francisco Opera is such a great company is that I don't know many other companies in the world who would do that. Put the complete set in the rehearsal room that it's there for all of us to work on and to get comfortable with and to understand it and to work it at its fullest.
Yeah.
It's been such an enriching experience.
And it's three decks. And so it was just a logistical standpoint of climbing the decks. We had to practice this before 1 week, you know, out.
Yeah.
And so it's really a character in the show.
It is. And it looks
it
great.
Breathes.
It sounds great. It's wood. It helps the singers project even more. It's absolutely brilliant.
Well, are you going to catch Billy Budd? You have six opportunities to do so through September 22nd, sfopera.com. Christian Van Horn, Lawrence Rennes, thank you. I'm so looking forward to this production as well.
Thanks. Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
some of the Act 3 interlude from Billy Budd. That recording, by the way, by Donald Runicles, we're hearing underneath us. On the opera front, it is opening week for the San Francisco Opera with their gala dinner and opening production of Gounod's Romeo and Juliet on Friday, the first of seven performances at the Opera House, one of which on Saturday, September 21st, will be simulcast for the free event of Opera in the Park, that park being Oracle Park, home of the Giants. Also for this very busy opening week, Saturday sees the first of six performances of Britten's Billy Budd, as we just heard, and the free Opera in the Park on Sunday, that park being Golden Gate Park and the Robin Williams Meadow, right near the carousel, if you're not familiar. That 1:30 p.m. concert will feature the conductor we heard from earlier this hour, Lawrence Rennes, as well as two additional conductors, conductor of Romeo and Juliet, Abel, and a former Adler Fellow, Robert Mollicone, will also share the podium with Lawrence Rennes on that concert. You'll have Romeo and Juliet at that concert, by the way. Penny Patti will be performing Romeo and Amina Idris as Juliet. Their first time where a husband-wife duo will perform opposite each other in the title roles. Learn more at sfopera.com. Maybe see you in the park then. My thanks to Neil Swinkles for producing Open Air. We're archived at klw.org. Thanks for listening.